Wallace?
Here.
And Mr. Reynolds?
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict. This is the time for public comment from anyone in the audience or, in fact, anyone on the board who has a comment that is unrelated to the agenda. So if you do, please step forward, state your name, and tell us what you want to tell us. Seeing none, we'll close that portion of the meeting. All right, on to the minutes for July 16th, 2009. Everybody have a chance to look at that? Any questions or perhaps a motion?
I'm going to abstain, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
I will abstain also, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't here.
Well, I wasn't here, but I understand I can vote, so I will move to accept the minutes as submitted.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And we have one abstention, I think.
I abstain, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. We are to the ops report, I think, Mr. Benedict.
Yes, Mr. Gehring. In your package, there's the July and August 2009 summary of the monthly operation report information regarding water deliveries, releases, accounting, and the chemical usage for your information. Additionally, current information on the status of the lake and the water treatment plant. The storage capacity of Lopez Lake is now 50.8%. The downstream releases are 4.0 million gallons per day. We've had no rainfall to date. The visibility in the terminal reservoir is 12 feet. The algae counts are 760. State water production is 1.0 million gallons per day. I should say state water distribution. And the plant production is 5 million gallons per day. The membrane filtrate turbidity is 0.015. I will note that about a week ago, we had a problem with the state control on our water distribution. It wasn't opening or wasn't closing, and the accuracy on the amount of water being delivered was in question. Today, we had a similar problem, and I think it's related to the power grid and where we are with respect to the power. When the vineyards use a lot of power, we end up seeming to have some problems with that. So today, our staff, in conjunction with CCWA, bypassed the state's control on the valve, so it's no longer controlled automatically by the state, and we are controlling it manually and keeping in contact with them until the stability of that system is figured out and we have better control on that. Not a particular operational problem, just something we have to attend to a little bit more deliberately than normal. Let me see if I had anything else with respect to that. I think that's all I have for now.
Yeah, so that would put us around 25,000 acre feet of storage left at this point.
Yes, I'm sorry, 25,000, just almost identically, exactly. Just a note, last year at this time we were at 62.5% of full storage.
Okay, thank you for that. Any comments, questions from the board?
Just one question. We had an odor problem, I guess, several weeks ago. It seems to be taken care of. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that's just about fully taken
care of. Less than the secondary standard of 3, so that's good. We're continuing to feed carbon. We do continue to have a little problem of getting enough carbon, so it tends to be backordered, so we're trying to use enough to keep the level where it needs to be and have enough to last until the next shipment. But it is on order. We are waiting to receive more carbon.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallace.
Dean, do you have a percentage of what we've used as a percentage of our site yield this year, or released, rather, altogether with surf water as well as released water?
I'm not sure I understand your question, John.
Well, of our total safe yield in the reservoir on a yearly basis, that has been established over a long period of time.
That would be the 8,300?
Yeah.
Annual, okay.
Right. So is there, I know that it doesn't jump out at you, but is there a figure here that you can quickly calculate how much of the safe yield that we've used this year, both in downstream releases as well as service water?
Yes, we would use the, let me look for the August report. We use the total water, let me look at the water processed. would be the 1932 acre feet. And
I guess what I was driving at, I know that you've probably got, what, 33, 34 items on here. Might be nice to have a percentage of our safe yield used to date so that you don't have to add up the numbers. But I don't know, what is the rest of the
committee?
Sure.
Because we're always going back to the safe yield discussions throughout committee's meeting here. So it might be good to have that figure on here as where we stand year to date. And that's water year to date, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
From April?
Yes, from April 1st.
Okay.
Right. We've used about 3,700 of the, I believe it's 8,400, do you recall, John?
8,300.
We've used 3,670 of that so far this year. So I will find a way to incorporate into the report, or at least maybe just give you that information in my operations report.
Sure.
Well, we have an entitlement total of about 4,530, if I recall, and then 4,200 for downstream release.
Yes.
I guess the question would be, what percentage of that have we used to date?
That's correct.
Right. Because we discuss it all the time in our discussions here.
Yes. Okay.
Ms. Dean, anything?
No, that was a concern about the 4 million gallons being released downstream, and that was what had happened. We were hearing that the last time we were here. And it is a concern. It's for the ag use, as I understand it.
Yes, ag use and for recharge both.
Okay.
And, well, not, I should say, for environmental purposes for the fish also. Yes. And we are monitoring that basically continually. I think I mentioned last time we have talked to one of the farmers about the water use down there and sort of his process and what they're doing and how they actually operate things and when they have demands and when they don't.
A man out reading those meters on the bridges here today. He was on Valley Road reading the one on Lost Bears Creek. It was dry. I don't know what kind of information he got out of that, but it might be good to know, Dean, if some way we can figure out how much water's going under the Biddle Bridge and then how much water's going past the water gauge, and that way you can see how much water's actually going in the ground.
On Biddle and which other one, Mr. Rounds?
The Warrior Grande water gauge behind
A.G. Creek?
A.G. Creek, yeah.
We read that one continuously.
I know you do, but yeah. I mean the difference to see how much is soaking in the ground, because Fair Oaks Avenue's got a reasonable stream at Fair Oaks Avenue, so there's a lot of water that goes in there.
Mr. Reynolds, the Biddle Bridge?
The Biddle Bridge, the...
Is that the Rodriguez Bridge?
Rodriguez Bridge, okay. All right. Depends on how long you've been here and what name you want to use.
All right, just wanted to clarify.
The Biddle Bridge was a wooden bridge, right, Jim?
That's right. And it went out to Ratzon Park.
See?
Yeah. Mr. Costello.
I'm good for it.
Now, Mr. Dean, I have a question. Are we still on track to be releasing more than safe yield this year?
At this point, I believe we are, yes.
All right. Any comments from the committee members? Sorry. Go ahead.
The only thing I was going to mention is that to be on track with exactly the 4,200 acre feet of environmental releases, we would have to release an average of 3.25 million gallons per day. And that's pretty difficult for us to maintain that level because, as I said, it impacts the level above Rodriguez and at the base of the dam. You can see all of our gauges drop within an hour of when we reduce releases below 3.5 million gallons per day. But we're trying to make a minor adjustment to get it to 3.25 million gallons if we can, so we can stay on track with that.
We're basically at 25,000 acre feet of storage, if I understood you correctly.
That's correct.
So at 20,000 acre feet, we're going to institute the low reservoir response plan?
We don't have an approved low reservoir response plan.
Well, there's one in the interim downstream release.
That's correct. As I understand that, that's only related to when we have rainfall releases, not when we have low dam levels.
Can we take that to TAC and discuss that then?
Yes.
comments on that from committee members?
No, I agree. I think that we need to revisit that the trigger levels there again as we're going into another perhaps dry season.
And we do have we. I should be able to bring to the TAC in 2 weeks the summary, executive summary of our final HCP fish passage release proposal, which includes a reduction of releases during drought years. So I'll try to make sure that we have something that we could specifically look at with respect to the out years of a drought, and maybe we can kick around how we might implement that. Depending on how things go here in the future.
Yeah, okay, thank you for that. Any other comments, committee members? Let me open this up to the public, see if there's anyone from the public who'd like to comment on this issue. Seeing
not. And I was very much involved in the actual construction. As a matter of fact, I designed all of the recreational sites and did the Lopez Lake emblem. That was my design, and the JCs built it. So I have a little bit of personal interest as to what is occurring today in the lake. The water release that's being taken care of downstream was something that was actually an agreement that we a long time ago made an agreement that so much water would be released downstream. And I'm sort of going through a little history because I'm trying to figure out what is actually occurring right now, and I'm going to report to this group of individuals that are very concerned about what is happening. The thing that has to be remembered is the fact that in 1969, when we had the 100-year storm, that, in fact, the dam was the savior of Arroyo Grande, we, in fact, were able to fill the lake at that time. But should the dam not have been there, we today, with the low water storages that we have, and the lack of rain, that whole stream would be completely dry. And this was one of the discussions that was going on at this group, is what is it that is actually taking precedence here right now? Are we talking about the dam was built for us, the public, we're paying for this water so that we can, in fact, have water to drink. And now they find out that more than the allotted regular water is actually going down the stream without the public really being that aware of how much and how long will this be going on. We are right now in a water shortage area, time, that is. And how long this is going to go on, I don't know. By the way, do I have a three-minute time limit?
Mayor, you've got as much time as you need right now.
Oh, thank you. I have the mic. As a former politician, any time you give him a mic, you know, you just can expect almost anything. So I just heard that today, just a few minutes ago, that we have 58... that the lake is at 58% of capacity, yet the report here says that it's 55, so I'm not sure which number I'm going to really trust at this point. That means quite a bit to me.
I think the number is 50.8, right?
That's correct.
Oh, 50.8?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I don't have my hearing aid on. 50.8 is the number. Wow, that's even worse than we anticipated. So we're very concerned to see what's happened because of the water, the way it's being handled. My real question is, tell me who is going to be making this decision as to who is going to be receiving the water, the people or the fish? You know, I remember one more thing that happened. When I was actually on the council, not this time, but before, which was a long time ago, we actually had a reserve of water. And in fact, that water was greater than we had anticipated. And the cities were permitted to take more water than they were actually allotted, which was great for everybody. It gave the citizens the good Lopez water. It allowed the underground water to be replenished. The farmers had the ability to pump without any concerns. And yet now we're finding that both the cities have to pump water from the underground aquifers, and everybody is now putting their straws into the same tap. Something's going to happen pretty soon. And those are the things that are bothering me. And it's not that I speak without, I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm very concerned. I'm going to be watching what goes on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions for Mayor Frashoni from the committee? No?
I'm very happy to answer any questions.
Dean, there, the mayor did raise a couple of questions, one of which was how long are we going to keep releasing more water downstream than Safefield? Do you know the answer to that?
Until we get a take permit from the resource agencies when our HCP is approved.
And do you have a projection on that date?
At this point, I'm estimating it will be probably less than 2 years.
We've been trying to get the answer to that question for 10 years, haven't we?
How long have we been at this, Mr. Benedict?
We've been at it about 10 years.
Well, you're right.
I will address that in a few moments when we get to the HCP, but there is a pinhole light at the end of the tunnel, I believe, at this point.
I would mention that I share the former mayor's concern about the downstream release. And in looking at the interim downstream release plan, it seems to be indicating that when we hit 20,000 acre feet, we've got 3 years to go before we hit minimum pool. And that is at 200 acre feet or less, or 200 acre feet less per year downstream release than we are currently releasing. I think this is something we can't drop. We've got to get solved.
Do you have that document in front of you, Joe?
All right. Anything else on that subject before we move on?
Well, I just maybe echo again what former Mayor Criscione said. I attended a meeting here, the last meeting, the meeting before, where I learned for the first time that we were releasing water without an approved environmental plan, if you will, as far as how much we had to release as opposed to what we are releasing. It seemed like we're just
1990 when we had that drought while we were down pumping, we only had 10 feet of water left in the hole, so we still got a little ways to go, but it's getting to be critical.
So you're higher now than in 1990 so far?
Yes. Or in the last drought, whenever that particular period was.
Okay.
In that time frame.
Thank you for that. Any other comments, questions from the committee? Seeing none, I guess we'll move on to old business third quarter budget status. And Ms. Brunin.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with the County Public Works Department. The item I will be discussing today is the fourth quarter report and not the third quarter as stated on the agenda. but again, there's a correction on the graph. I need to make that correction. It says first quarter, and it should read fourth quarter, and I'll make that correction. There are three graphs reflecting the fourth quarter budget versus actual. The first graph at the top is capital outlay reserves. As of the fourth quarter, we are under budget by $985,000. And this is due to the upgrade of the water treatment plant, sludge beds, and the waterline bridge projects. The second graph represents routine operations and maintenance. As of the fourth quarter, we're over by $321,000. And again, this is due to the water treatment plant. The third graph compares the non-routine operating and maintenance, and we're under $459,000 there. The majority of that is the pigging project and the HCP water rights. So overall, we're at 20% under budget. Again, this is due to capital outlay and the non-routine operations and maintenance. Also, I'd like to mention that the final numbers will be presented at the next meeting. I did some kind of rough numbers, and there will be a credit. How much, I don't know, and I'd rather not say because I don't want to be held to it. And that concludes my report. So if you have any questions.
Okay, thank you for that. Questions?
I guess I just had one question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the, you mentioned the capital outlay. Could you explain again why we're so far under budget?
There were some projects that were canceled.
Okay. And those were?
I don't have those with me.
I mean, which projects?
You know, I'm not sure. I passed them out last.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The last meeting. I don't have those with me.
Mr. Castell.
Thank you. So we're on routine operation and maintenance, we're $320,000 over, mm-hmm. and that's primarily water treatment.
Yes.
And that's offset by the capital outlay that we didn't expend.
Right.
And we have access to those capital funds to cover the excess operation.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mrs. Brunick. And I think we're to the HCP processing status, Mr. Benedict.
The releases and how it impacts the fish and what the flows are to mimic the natural flows beyond what we're seeing now as far as not having a take permit, but to mimic the natural flows. We're pretty much in agreement with the resource agencies on that's the basis of what we're going to be doing. And we've done a number of models, and we've done some in the last couple of months. And the models that we've refined to the point that any more models don't make any difference. We were trying to refine an attraction flow model that would mimic what National Marine Fisheries believe should happen during large storms, after large storms. And so we believe that we have a good model that reflects what the resource agency wants and is very satisfactory to us to do with parameters on it of when we make releases and when we don't and how much they are for. And so we are finalizing that summary document that incorporates or discusses that model. I hope to bring that back to the TAC at the next meeting on the 1st of October to discuss that with the recommendations on it. And subsequently, we have a letter already drafted to Mr. Spina, and the balance of that report, which describes the model, and submit that to the resource agency with anticipation of their concurrence within a couple of months and us being able to revise the draft HCP so we can submit it to National Marine Fisheries for their complete review of that document. They have advised us in writing that they will review the entire document after we have concurrence of this model in the technical issues about the releases. They will review the entire document and give us comments back within a year. During that year period, so I'm looking at a couple of months and then a year, so that's 14 months to have all comments back from them. During that time, we will also be working with Fish and Wildlife Service to get their issues on the table and resolve those. So we anticipate that within a year and a quarter or so, we will have all the comments from the agencies, be able to make any revisions to that draft document and submit that for release to the public at that time. So that's where we are right now on the HCP. A couple other leftover items. There was a question about how much money we have spent on the HCP to date. We have spent $1,091,000 and some change to this point. I will mention, as it does relate to this document. Some of you may not know, we had a just before the Lopez Water Treatment Plant came online in May of 2007, I believe about February or March 2007, one of the operators turned a 3-inch ball valve off, which was the coagulant release system, which fills up our day tank. At the time, it was the old plant. He turned the valve off, but the valve didn't shut off with regards to violation of the water quality and the environmental, the fish kill. I heard back last week from our county council, and the Fish and Game has done a report. It's a draft that was sent for our review and consideration. I don't think it has any conclusion in it. I haven't gone through it yet. It's about 200 or 300 pages of documentation. But there was two steelhead that were killed, two of those 30 that were steelhead. The rest were suckerfish and some other kind of fish. And I guess Fish and Game went out when they tried to find any other fish that were in the creek, and I don't think they found any other steelhead. But that is in progress right now as far as resolving that. We don't know really what's going to happen with that. It's an unfortunate incident. It happened, like I said, just about 3 months before we started the plan up. So all of the safeguards that are in place now have been taken care of with respect to that not happening again. But I just wanted to mention that because it is a leftover item that we'll hopefully be resolving in the next 6 months or so.
Okay, thank you for that. And potential fine on two steelhead is $50,000?
I thought it was in the range of about $15,000 a fish is what I heard a couple of years ago, I recall. But I don't know what level it is. There may be something beyond just the fish itself. I'm not aware of it.
Okay, and then summarizing on the HCP, we're 10 years and $1.1 million down the road, 14 months to go.
That's correct.
Well, under 2 years. He didn't say 14
months. Oh, sorry. Questions? Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Dean, for arranging for Mr. Spina to be with us to present maybe more points from the agency standpoint about our interim release plan and other things that are pertinent to our discussions. When's the date that he'll be coming to see us?
It's the next meeting, which would be November 19th, and that will be at Aurora Grandy.
Will there be talking points or an agenda that he will address, or is it going to be more or less a introduction, hello, how are you, and ask questions by the committee here?
I would imagine he's going to come and respond to questions from us. So if we have an agenda for him, we should probably send him questions in advance to have him be able to address those, you know, so he's aware that we're not trying to surprise him or, you know, ambush him or anything like that.
Has he commented on our, I forget, did he comment on our interim release plan?
He did not. No, they did not comment on the IDRIS plan.
Would he be prepared to do that, or do we not want to have that done at that time? I don't know.
I don't know a good answer to that, Mr. Wallace. I could see pros and cons of either way.
Yeah.
Mr. Wogge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that we have, they seem to be buying into our proposal right now, at least as far as the modeling goes and how much and so forth would be released under without the dam and so forth. Is there any provision in the regulations to have an interim?
Is the other one? Is there another agency besides that who will be reviewing our plan?
Those are the two main resource agencies that deal with the endangered species. The steelhead is with National Marine Fisheries, and the red-legged frog and the tidewater goby are the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And Fish and Wildlife Service is on board with what we've been doing. They've been brought up to speed all along.
Yes. They actually got a copy of the draft report 3 years ago or so. They had some comments that we didn't agree with and some that we likely will be making changes in the document when we make the draft change shortly.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Costello, anything?
Nothing new. We've been asking the same questions for about 7 years now. It's just nice to see we're getting closer and that we've got a pinhole of a light at the end of the tunnel.
Do you recall, Mr. Dean, what the date was that we submitted that HCP to them initially, the draft? Is it 04?
I think it's 4 years ago. Yes, Mr. Garrett.
And so far they've refused to review the entire document?
Yes, that's correct.
Let me open it up to the audience, see if there are any comments from the audience. Seeing none, anything else from the committee? All right, I think we're on to quagga mussel update. Mr. Benedict.
Yes.
That's Mr. Beaton.
In the interest of variety, I've asked Mr. Beaton to address a couple of topics tonight, so he'll be talking about the quagga mussels.
John Beaton with the Public Works Department. Included in your agenda packet are invasive mussel monitoring monthly summary reports for July and August. I'm happy to report that to date, no mussels have been found in Lopez, Salinas, Kachuma, Whale Rock, Nacimiento, San Antonio, or Lopez. I'd also point out that due to the very low levels in Nacimiento and San Antonio, inspectors in that area have been able to look at the underside of docks and such that are now out of the water and do a more thorough inspection, and they've not found any mussels. Currently, we're reviewing the final draft of the invasive mussel response plan prepared by Dennis Delzite. And also, I mentioned that an invasive mussel control plan will be forwarded to the Board of Supervisors for adoption. That plan's intended to meet the requirements of AB 804 and would incorporate the inspection and disinfection procedures currently implemented by County Parks staff. A few slides of invasive mussels. And we'll talk about monitoring and looking at these substrates, and then we'll report on these monitoring reports. Top slide there is an actual inspection of the substrate that has been in the water.
What exactly is a substrate?
It's literally it's a piece of plastic, a piece of pipe, a little, and you can see that literally it looks like a piling from Pismo Pier. There just full of barnacle-like mussels, and it only took a few months for them to grow to that concentration and degree on that substrate, but. Again, so far on our system, all our lakes and such, we've not found anything so far. Do you have any questions that
you have? John, would you put that back? I want to get one more slide.
Mr. Waggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had one question. When will the response plan be finished?
There are two plans. The invasive response plan will probably be done within the next 3 months. That's what we would do if we were to get the mussels. There's a prevention plan we're doing, which basically summarizes the park's decontamination procedures and what the county's doing now, and that likely won't be done until probably the first part of next year.
Okay, thank you.
You have any more, Mr. Beaton? Are you still entertaining questions? That's it?
One question. Has there been any of these other lakes where they've been infested? Have they had any luck by eliminating them or reducing their number of them in any way, John?
To my knowledge, they've not found any silver bullet. Some places will use chlorine to try to remove them. At San Justo, what they want to try now is potassium chloride, a salt that had some success in a quarry back east. They're lowering San Justo Reservoir down to as low a level as possible, and then they plan to treat that with this potassium chloride, see if it works. I would mention that I've seen that a company in California actually is trying to develop a bacteria-related product that shows promise. I think they call it Zequinox, I think is their trade name they're coming up with. They're conducting some trials with that now, and they're seeking EPA approval. And according to their website, they're hoping that that'll be approved for use in the United States and Canada, possibly as early as next year. But it's, it utilizes Pseudomonas fluorescens bacteria that it occurs widely, is not toxic to other biological life, but apparently is very toxic to these mussels, so it shows some promise. So, there might be a solution on the horizon here. But.
Yeah, I think John mentioned the thing article that I read about using some biological controls, and they had a real good respect for it, and it sounded like it was going to be maybe a silver bullet.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I'll go out and buy stock in that company.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, anybody else? Questions for Mr. Beaton? Anyone from the audience? Questions for Mr. Beaton or comments? Seeing none, thank you. And I think we are now to plant upgrade completion issues. Mr. Benedict.
Yes, just a brief status of the plant upgrade completion. We have a couple of remaining items. One is we're in $25,000 worth of items that were poorly or inappropriately designed, and the majority of that money is the dissolved air flotation cover, which was an aluminum cover over the plant that we had to take out and replace with a metal building. That represents probably about $90,000 of that claim money. So the Director of Public Works would be looking at that, and I assume negotiating with Black & Veatch to resolve that item. The items, there's two items with the Paul Corporation. I've got a brief illustration I've got on the screen here that I'll try to describe to you. The two items are, one, a replacement of some piping and some, that's one of them. The second one is microbial-induced corrosion, which we call MIC. And the slide that's on the screen shows the a typical rack. We have five racks, and the membranes are the large canisters. Oops, doesn't have the canisters in it. There's two pieces to this. The valve rack is on the left side, and the membrane rack, where the membranes go, is this back portion. And in the back portion of it, these are the membranes in a typical unit, and the piping at the top and the bottom, if I can show you here with the pointer, and this is stainless steel piping. That piping has microbial-induced corrosion in it and develops pinhole leaks because of the basically the constituents of the water. And the Paul Corporation is going to be replacing all of that piping on all five racks at no cost to the district. The equipment is actually on the site now, and I believe they're going to be starting that next week, replacing all that equipment or those portions of it. That's not an issue. It's just something that they're doing under warranty. The issue that we have that is problematic is that on the valve rack, which is on the left side inside this blue cage, if you will, all the curved piping here, that's not going to be replaced. Paul has said they don't need to replace that. We don't have any evidence exterior-wise of any leakage of that piping. But it was a major concern because you can't tell it very well, but if you were on the site, there appears to be rust spots on the outside of that piping, which looks odd for stainless steel. Most people think it shouldn't rust. I guess there's reasons that it might, but we were concerned about it, and so we told them we wanted them to inspect the inside of that to see if there was any problems inside. The next slide, this is a portion of one of those pipes looking into it. And you see it looks basically perfect. You see nothing inside there. We had them do portions of two of the racks to look at. This slide, which is pretty bad, but I think you can see on the bottom there is staining, looks like rust in here, and that goes about 3 feet into the pipe. And we don't believe that should be like that after 2 years of operation. So we asked Paul to, this is from their inspection report. They basically told us they didn't see any one other item, there's a performance test that was done wherein we determine how much chemical and power usage that the membrane system uses and compare that to what they bid on. There's a little bit of a discrepancy on how much power and chemical usage will be used, which is more than their bid contract. So we have to resolve that also, and that's also pending. So those are the two items that remain to be able to close out the Black and Veatch contract and the Paul contract, and we get those two done, then I won't annoy you with any more plant upgrade issues ever again.
All right.
Yep. I'm sorry. I did want to advise you of one thing. I got some good news as a result of the plant efficiency assessment that some of our groups are doing. We'll be talking about a little bit later. Paul told me when I asked them for a membrane replacement program, because we have a seven-year guarantee on these membranes. They told me that they've had them out there 10 or 12 years. They don't have a membrane replacement program because they've never had to replace any of their membranes. So that's good news that 10 or 12 years out, we don't have to replace the membranes at least at this point. So we'll be discussing that further with, as far as financially budgeting for that in the future. But we've got a very good, excellent longevity as far as we see right now. That's the end of my report, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you for that. Questions? Mr. Costello.
Dean, you say it's been 2 months since we sent our challenge to Paul on this issue, and they haven't responded at all?
That's correct.
Isn't that kind of unusual? I mean, would they acknowledge receipt of it at least? Or
they've acknowledged receipt of it. I can't tell you why. I can conjecture based on things that I proposed to them in the past. I suggested to them that about a year ago that they provide us an extended warranty on the piping. And they flatly told me no. And I said, okay, fine, we'll go prove that it's going to be okay. There's nothing inside that we need to be concerned about. We checked references. They were all good. This report, the field report, came from a couple of their corrosion engineers who signed it and said there is no evidence of MIC. We sent it to a consultant corrosion engineer, and he said that wasn't true. So I think they're trying to backpedal a little bit and figure out what they're going to do to make this right. I believe they will. I think they're just a little bit stuck here.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Questions? Seeing none, anything? Mr. Reynolds.
Dean, do you have any estimate at this point in time what it would cost to replace those membranes?
There's about 260 membranes, I believe. They're about $2,000 a piece materials. We have a guarantee price from them of what they would charge us to replace them.
So the members of the public, anybody in the public want to talk about that? Seeing none, we'll move on to sludge bed rehab project. And Mr. Benedicts, you're on to that, looks like.
Yes. We have budgeted a project to develop two existing holes in the ground at our plant to turn them into sludge beds. Thank you. The photo that you see here is of the sludge bed area. There's two operating ponds that are on the right. The two ponds on the left are holes in the ground that are not lined, do not have piping, do not have filtration in them. They're just sort of dead storage ponds. They've been filled with some of the sludge that came out of the other ponds to get things out of the way. They've been filled with all kinds of different stuff. The project that we have is estimated to cost around $800,000, and we'll be developing those two ponds on the left that are not developed into two two compartment ponds each. They will have a concrete wall down the middle so we can fill up half the pond at a time and effectively have four smaller ponds that we can distribute the effluent and let them dry and filter in conjunction with the two existing ponds that we use. So we have had a lot of problems initially the first year, year and a half, with getting rid of water, because when the plant shuts down, we have to dump a lot of water. We've done some things to try to recycle that water into the terminal reservoir and minimize things, but we don't have a lot of place to put water when it goes down. So this will assist with that. Plus, if we have the sludge beds that are existing that don't dry, it takes a while for them to dry, especially during the wintertime. If we can't dry that out, we got no place to put the water, and we got no place to dry it. So we've been severely lacking this for probably, actually before the upgrade stopped, probably 5 or 10 years. This was not included in the upgrade. We thought we would have a lot less water. We do have a lot less water that we have to dump during normal operations. It does have a higher quantity of sludge. And if we have some kind of upset in the plant, we need additional areas. So that's what this project is for. This is one of the basins on the left that is not developed, and it just has a lot of debris in it that we are cleaning out now so we can get into this project. We anticipate that we will be out to bid probably in the next 4 months with this project. It will be an advertised project for construction.
And this project's been fully examined by the Technical Advisory Committee?
We have talked about it. I haven't brought plans and specifications to the TAC. If they would like to do that, I could certainly do that. We're at a 65% submittal stage right now. We're reviewing it internally with our design division and our construction division in Public Works Department.
All right. Thank you for that. Any questions, comments? Mr. Waggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We could be on the cusp of an El Nino. I guess we're somewhat in El Nino right now. We would love to have an El Nino get lots of rain.
Lopez water can be characterized as hard. It has a high alkalinity. As the pH of that water increases, there's an increasing tendency or desire on the part of the water to form scale deposits. That's something we've all known for many years. An industry measure of this scaling tendency is the Langelier Index, or Langelier Index. The Langelier Index, a value of zero, indicates a stable water, one that is not corrosive, is not scaling. A negative Langelier Index is a water that is corrosive or has corrosive tendencies, and a positive one is water is one that would be have scaling tendencies. The Langelier Index is influenced by pH, temperature, calcium content, and alkalinity. And hold all the various factors constant, an increase in pH will increase the Langelier Index, or an increase in temperature increases the Langelier Index. I should note that this index is only predicts the tendency of the water to form deposits. It doesn't predict how much the deposits are. Would be found. In the water industry, a light, thin deposit inside pipes can form a protective coating and is generally desired. And a Langelier Index of 0.2 to 0.5 generally provides an environment that's conducive to this kind of a coating. Lopez water historically has ranged from about 0.1 to as high as 1.6 and averages about 0.8, so it's well into the scaling tendencies. Not long after this plant, the new plant came online, we started noticing significant scale deposits in the membrane pump screens inside of piping, inside of online analyzers and such. Throughout the plant, there was significant scaling. The Langelier Index at the time was elevated, but not any more than we'd seen in the old plant. personally, I'd characterize the scaling that we found as being severe. To address that, operators initiated a program of acid cleaning of the most impacted components. So they take piping out, soak it in acid, clean it out, put it back into service. As you can imagine, that was pretty labor-intensive, was costly, created more treatment challenges at the plant, and disposal of those cleaning solutions added to the problem. As part of their evaluation, Kennedy Jenks came in and looked at this, these scaling problems, and recommended that we adjust the pH. We lower the pH, which results in a lower Langelier index and less tendency on the part of the water to form scale. A typical way of doing that is by adding acid to the water. You could add something like sulfuric acid. It's very effective. It's inexpensive. And it's readily available. The challenge with sulfuric acid is there are some significant handling issues with that. It's a very corrosive or as the preferred option for us. We budgeted monies for that project and are in the process of trying to implement that. Interestingly, though, since Kennedy Jenks' evaluation, we've noticed a decrease in the scaling at the Lopez plant. The assistant superintendent came across a report that noted that certain new concrete can contribute toward scaling on a short-term basis. It's possible that we saw some of this at the Lopez plant. So what we are trying to do now is to evaluate the rate at which scale forms in the plant and to determine and also evaluate where it may be occurring throughout the plant. And the way we are trying to do that is by installing coupons or short pieces of piping and little inspection ports at various points in the treatment process. The most convenient place for us to do that is where the online analyzers are located. They're already sampling water from all these different places in the treatment plant, and it would be pretty simple for us actually to construct some apparatus to install these coupons or test pipe sections and such at all these locations. So that's our plan at this point in time. We're in the process of installing those test locations. We'll continue to look at the rate at which this scale is forming and make a determination as to the value of fully implementing a pH control program like we would have with the CO2. I would note that even if the rate of scale is less than it was when the plant first came online, it may still be significant enough or scaling enough to where it would be in our best interest to lower the pH more. There's also additional benefits to lowering the pH, which can include things like reduced coagulant dosage, as the coagulant tends to work better at a lower pH. There can be improved membrane performance, and it takes less energy to pump the water through the membranes if they're cleaner. The THMs can be produced at a lower, or THM production can be reduced at lower pH, and disinfectant, like chlorine, tends to work better at a lower pH. So again, our plan right now is to continue to do this testing, measure the rate at which the scale is forming, and determine how it's best to address that long term.
All right, thank you, Mr. Beat. Any questions, Mr. Costello?
Yes. How long do you think you need to go with this testing procedure and process till we need to do something?
You know, it's hard to predict. Again, we can install coupons or test sections of pipe or inspection ports and take a look at that and say, gosh, you know, in 2 months, 3 months, we haven't seen anything, or we might measure enough to be able to predict that it's these deposits are forming. What we have are just our observations, and especially when this plant first went online for the first several months, the rate it was severe. You know, the screens and such would plug up to the point where you couldn't put any water.
How much new concrete did we have if that was the culprit?
Lots.
Yeah, it's lots. And you know, looking at where this, now it's old concrete. You know, and maybe that's, you know, it's just not an issue anymore. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate the information,
Mr. Waggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps a couple questions. Did we get a cost comparison between sulfuric acid and CO2?
I believe they did include the cost comparison. One of the big issues between the two has to do with a safety program associated with handling the chemicals.
Right.
And I think that would be very significant with the sulfuric acid, where we can avoid that with the CO2. As far as equipment costs and cost of the chemicals and such, it's no doubt less to buy a couple 3,500 gallon tanks and some pumping equipment for full sulfuric acid, but it's far overshadowed with the issues associated with handling those chemicals.
One other question too: and did we have this problem with the old plant?
Not to the same degree. I wasn't at the plant when it was first built, but I came there maybe 7 or 8 years after it started. Any time that you increase the pH significantly, we would see deposits in the old plant. But generally, piping, walls of the plant, online equipment, such, no, we did not see the same kind of problem.
I guess, are there any industry? I don't know, has anyone else encountered this kind of a thing where some kind of leaching from the concrete is causing these kinds of problems?
I've not seen this one report that referred to. I would like to look at that and see what it says. Apparently someone has. I can't speak to the specifics of that, not having seen the report.
I guess just begs the question, did we get the right kind of concrete put in there in the first place, or was there some kind of an issue there?
I've done some quick searches on the internet, and nothing comes back right away. So I'd have to believe it is somewhat unusual.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Wallace. Anything?
Would John? Would aeration of our influent help lower the pH?
With the dissolved air flotation, it's significantly aerated.
Okay.
Coming through there. As far as aeration out in the terminal reservoir, something like that, that can have some benefits as far as blue-green algae production and keeping things oxidized and such there. But as far as having a significant impact on the pH or the temperature, I suspect not.
Mr. Gastello? No. All right. And then we'll move on. Thank you, Mr. Oh, wait a minute. We have someone in the audience. All right. We'll open this to the public. Please step forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Marilee Hyman. I'm the District 3 representative to RAC. I did have the opportunity to visit the plant, and Mr. Beaton described what he described to you this evening. I did have a question. I mean, he mentioned an awfully lot of elements to be considered in lowering the pH and all the things it could affect. I'm wondering if Mr. Beaton had an educated guess as to how much he would save. We clearly have a scaling problem, and he's looking to suppress that with a project. Does he have any kind of guess as to the kind of savings if you put one of these suppression projects in place? Thank you.
Mr. Beaton, can you answer that question?
It's something that we're looking at. Obviously, that's the cost benefit is critical to the project. We have looked at possible savings in coagulant dose again, and that could be on the order of you know, thousands of dollars. I want to say per month, but you might use you know, you might be able to reduce the coagulant dose by as much as a third. The cost associated with the cleaning, if we continue to have these problems. Those are significant. Those membrane pump screens, you know, we have to rent a crane to come in and lift the top of these things off and pull them out. You know, it's it can be done, but it's labor intensive. Turbidimeter bodies, other piping and such. Again, you know, we have a routine monthly program to clean those. I think a big concern for me would be if. The scaling is continuing to form, and continuing to restrict the inside diameter of a pipe someplace. Is that going to reduce the amount of water that can flow through that pipe? Reduce our production capability? What's it going to take to get that cleaned? You know, some of that pipe, if it's buried in the ground or difficult to get to, you know, I'd be hard pressed to think how you could effectively. You know, acid treat the entire plant to clean that out. Apparently, it can be done, but you know, I just have to believe it'd be very costly. No doubt, much more. It'd be more cost effective for us to reduce that or prevent that from occurring in the first place.
I might add the technical report that Kennedy Jenks did to sort of substantiate that we were going down the right path here with the carbon dioxide indicated that. The annual cost of that system, carbon dioxide system, was around $40,000 a year. They also indicated that the cost to do a, quote, one-time cleaning per year with sulfuric acid or hydrochloric acid, I don't recall which one they suggested, either one, was probably around the same cost, or maybe actually a little bit less. It didn't quantify any savings specifically. We have been talking in the good months, or at least we know what we're doing when we do that, so we make a good projection on that. But and one of the things also with respect to the safety program, if we do have more than, I'm guessing it's around 1,000 gallons of hydrochloric acid on the site or sulfuric acid, we have to go back to what's called a process safety management program. Which we guess will probably run about $100,000 a year in just additional administrative costs. Part of the plant, we reduced the large chlorine tanks that we used to have on the plant, and we don't have to. So we dropped off of this process safety program when we instituted the new plant, and that has saved us a lot of administration time, not having to deal with that particular program, I guess, if you will. But if we go back to a large acid storage, we will have to go back to that program. And we discussed it at the TAC a little bit, and I think that it was unanimous concurrence from the TAC that we didn't want our operators having a lot of high concentration acid on the site and having to deal with it. It'd be my perspective that I'd want my staff to go on vacation a week, turn the plant off, and have some subcontractor come in and burn the stuff all out and then go away, and we'd come back and turn the plant back on. That just seems a little bit more than we'd want to do with an acid program. So the CO2 program seems to be a positive way to go.
All right. Thank you for that. Did that dissertation raise any other questions on the part of the committee? How about the audience? Did we get your concern answered? Anyone else from the public have any concerns or issues on that item? Seeing none, let's move on to Spillway Raise Project. And that is Mr. Benedict.
Yes, the Spillway Raise Project is, let me see if I can go in advance here a little bit and maybe introduce this. The Spillway Raise, I guess, vision or concept is to install an operable spillway to increase the height of the water level at maximum capacity, somewhere from 3 to 5 feet approximately. At this point, where we are in that process is we have the district has sent out letters to all of the users and agencies of water that pay for the water, and ask them if they want to participate, if they're interested or not. I understand that Oceano is voted not to participate in the project. Is that correct, Ms.
That's
Dean?
That's correct.
Okay. And Aurora Grandy has voted, I believe, just this, I guess, last week to participate to the extent of contributing about $25,000, I believe, to the next phase, study of engineering and environmental feasibility. I know Port San Luis is looking at it. I haven't heard from them. CSA 12, which is a county organization, we anticipate that we will participate. I'm guessing we will participate in the project sort of as an active observer. This would be a Type 3 project by contract, which means that only the participating agencies would pay for it, and they would only get more detailed engineering, probably on what height capacity may affect the stability of the dam, and probably some preliminary environmental issues. And I'd ask Dwayne probably to – I'll be working with Dwayne on what his approach is going to be and with the technical advisory committee on that. So that's kind of where we are. I guess I'll leave it there, see if there's any questions or things I may have missed.
Okay, thank you for that. Questions for Mr. Benedict on that item? Mr. Wallace.
Just a comment, Dean. I took this to Annapolis CSD Board of Directors last night, or Tuesday night, excuse me. And after considerable discussion, the board decided to tentatively participate in the study, contingent upon determining better what the cost might be. So I think that they're interested. Of course, we're a subcontractor to CSA 12, and so that kind of jives in with CSA 12's participation as well. So when we'll coordinate with Dwayne and get some better figures, take those back to our board, but I think that they would participate if the figures come out right.
I have asked Ms. Brunick, who I believe left, to do a budget of costs so all the subcontractors would know what their cost effectively would be based on a $5 million project, and then we could project the initial share of that when we work with City of Pismo Beach on how they want to do the preliminary steps here.
Yeah, I should clarify. AVLA decided to participate in the first phase, and again, that would be contingent upon how that turns out for final construction cost estimates and those sorts of things.
Great.
All right, anything else? Mrs. Dean? No? Mr. Reynolds? Mr. Benedict, did you poll the subcontractors in CSA 12 as yet to see if they're
I have advised them. I haven't made a follow-up call to them. The only two I know are Avalo and the port. So, and the port was actually going this week to discuss that, and I don't know what night their meeting was. We will probably decide. Well, I know we will decide for the individual contractors. You may or may not know we have there's 20 subcontractors in CSA 12. Nine of them have historically used more than their allocation of water to the total of about 26 acre feet. Port San Luis doesn't use 85 acre feet of their 100 acre feet allocation. And there's some other users that don't use all theirs. So the net 240-some acre-feet that CSA 12 has is not used, but some people are using more than their allocation. And we're addressing that.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other questions? How about the public? Any questions or comments from the public? Mr. Chisholm, anything? No?
One thought, Mr. Chisholm.
Yes.
You know, going back through all the problems we had when we did the retrofit on the dam, I'm a little bit concerned about how big a can of worms we're going to get open when you start studying this to find out if we have to increase the field of stone columns or increase the height of it or whatever. And this thing, you know, you're talking about maybe a $4 or $5 million project. From what happened before, this $4 or $5 million project can go right through the roof. So I think we need
and you don't need to turn that down, but I just put this slide up here that represents basically 20 people that have volunteered from all the agencies to participate in these three different groups. Each group has met once. The engineering group has met twice. The operations group will meet before the end of this month to discuss appropriate options of operation of the plant, our capital improvement program, the staffing levels, how the finances are accrued and charged and budgeted. We are preparing comparable staffing levels based on other plants that we're aware of that are comparable to ours. That will be distributed probably next month, so we can look at that information. We're reviewing just about everything that we can think of to make sure we're being as efficient as we can and trying to be transparent with all that information, share that between groups. We anticipate that after the next meeting with the operations group, we will probably come back together to the main group of a consortium of everyone and discuss what the next step is, if there's any additional details or reporting that the subgroups want to discuss before they final their recommendations or their observations. So we are moving ahead with this. Everybody's being cooperative, and we're asking any questions or coming up with any ideas that we think we need to that would be helpful. And we anticipate, we're hoping that'll be done by the end of the year. It might take a couple months looking at the schedule now beyond that, but I think we're moving ahead, and we just need to do some probably documentation and put some recommendations down on paper what we're looking at. And that's the end of my report, Mr. Green.
Okay, thank you for that. Any questions or comments from the committee members on that issue? Seeing none, let's move on to, and I guess the Arroyo Grande Creek Ag water use that's tabled now?
Yes, it is.
You don't have a report on that?
No, we are still developing information on usage, historical patterns. We are doing it in the meantime as time permits right now, but I don't have anything to go forward yet with that. We will. I should mention the next Tuesday, the county staff will be presenting to the Board of Supervisors the master water plan and water reliability and water use issues in the county. Incorporated in that presentation will be some comments and information regarding the Lopez Spillway Raise project, the environmental releases from the dam, and that is a result partially of the request of the Technical Advisory Committee of Zone 3 to make sure the Board of Supervisors is aware of and understands what we are doing and why we are doing it as far as the releases go. We are talking about also Santa Margarita and Nipomo and Santa Maria and some other issues, but I just wanted to let you know we do want to inform the board, advise them what we're doing, why we're doing it, and put it in context of the entire county's water plan, master water plan that we are preparing right now. The membrane plant, current law specifically, but somewhat vaguely, specifies the type of filtration you have to have in order to take the water directly from a lake, a reservoir like Nacimiento or Lopez, and treat it in through a membrane plant. Because of some concerns about lobbyists in Sacramento and some issues that we're not really actually sure about, they killed that bill. The state killed that bill. The city of Paso Robles is now trying to go back and get an interpretation if the existing law can be interpreted to mean their anticipated membrane plant can treat the Nacimiento water directly. Those are some technical issues they're bringing up. Mr. Kurt Souza from the Public Health Department, is that the name of his department? Who monitors and regulates the state drinking water standards. He is going to be helping, I guess, Paso Robles in this process to explain what the process is that the law requires and what the current membrane process is that would incorporate the law or be in conflict with the law. The short answer anyway now is that that bill has been dropped. Paso Robles trying to pursue the definitions of that law. If they don't succeed, they will go back and try to reintroduce a law, and they will reincorporate our plant to give us the ability to directly treat the Lopez water without going into the terminal reservoir, which may at times save us some money and some aggravation and some treatment processes. But for now, that issue is dead, depending on what Paso Robles does next. So I just wanted to give you a medium-sized dissertation on that issue.
Medium size. So that leaves us in the cold if Paso Robles gets their own interpretation?
That's correct, unless we can fit in under the same interpretation, Mr. Gehring.
All right, thank you. All right. Comments from the committee? Questions?
It's really important.
It is important.
We achieve that.
Well, let me ask this. What's staff's next move if we happen to get left by the wayside?
Well, I think we have to see what the interpretation comes out.
Okay.
And I believe Black & Veatch is designing a membrane system. It's a trailer-type system, not a custom-built system. So if we can fit in with the same guidelines, we would probably push that.
All right. That raise any other issues the committee members would like to raise? Okay. How about the audience? Anything? Anybody from the public have a comment? Seeing none. All right. New business. We don't show any scheduled, and I don't have anything to add myself. How about any of the committee members? Any new business we'd like to add? Agendize? Seeing none. Comments? Mr. Costello. Any comments?
Well, I go back and revisit it. I'm just hopeful that we're going to see something come forward, maybe with this meeting with Mr. Spiva, we'll get closer and closer to the HCP. Very much interested in
responding to the new membrane system, which has been there 2 years. So we don't notice any surprises. That's one reason we're trying to push the sludge bed project and get this done. So that's really the most difficult thing we have right now that sort of handcuffs us. If we have a plant upset, we got no place to put water if that happens two or three times in a row. So I think we're pretty well prepared for that.
Well, I guess I was thinking in terms of we do have a new plant. This would be if we get the El Nino. We certainly hope we do or get additional rain. But is there anything, because we have a new plant, yeah, you mentioned the membranes, anything else that might be impacted? I guess I'm not asking for an answer right now, but I guess I would ask that you be looking at what are we prepared for an El Nino, perhaps a large El Nino. I don't know.
We would love to have that more water in that reservoir.
Right. Oh, yeah. This is definitely be a blessing. Thank you.
Well, we do watch the condition of the lake water, and we do select levels to extract the water from the best possible quality. So
okay.
I think that, in that sense, we do react to water quality at the lake.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Thank you.
Mr. Wallace.
Dean, I think it would be worthwhile maybe to bring to the TAC some talking points for Mr. Spina that we might discuss internally at TAC in order to be better prepared for his presentation at the next advisory committee meeting.
Yeah, I'll draft up some comments or some questions that we might have if we can review those and basically agree to them at the TAC, and then we can send them down to Mr. Spina before he comes up.
Good, thank you.
Okay. And those can go out to committee members ahead of time?
I'll put them on the agenda when I send it out next week.
Okay. Mrs. Dean, anything? Mr. Reynolds, anything?
I think, Mr. Chairman, that since our Davis-Grunsky bond issue is all done with after 40 years and whatnot, that we ought to have some idea of how the extra money is going to be spent or where we're going to get the extra money if we have to subordinate the recreation department out there. And so at some point in time, I'd like to see that on the agenda or somebody give us a definition of what's going to happen.
So your question is, did the payoff of that bond result in a change in cash flow, and what are we doing with the money?
That's nuts and bolts of it.
So we could talk about that next meeting, maybe?
I wish Ms. Brunick was still here. Okay.
She can answer it next time.
Okay.
Anything else? Anybody have any burning things they wish to raise? How about the audience? Nobody's raising a hand? All right. So the next meeting will be November 19th. 2009, 6:30 at the Arroyo Grande City Council Chambers. We are adjourned.